Hello and welcome to this Mental Models for Navigating the Markets podcast discussion sponsored by PSG Wealth. In today's discussion, we're going to be exploring the role of mental models in navigating the complexities of investing. From understanding structural market trends and evaluating long-term opportunities to managing risks and avoiding emotional pitfalls, we delve into how disciplined thinking can transform investment outcomes. And this is going to be backed by insights from psychology, economics, and real-world market practice. This discussion shows why mental models are more than theoretical tools. They are practical strategies for being resilient, building resilient, high-performing portfolios. Whether you're an experienced investor or just starting to refine your approach, this session offers actionable guidance to help you think clearly, act decisively, and stay focused on what truly drives returns. My name is Bulia Gabaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and joining me is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, that is Adrian Pask. Adrian, it's always good to chat to you today.
Hi, Madiba. It's good to hear your voice as well, and it's good to be on the podcast.
In previous sessions, Adrian, you and I have spoken about the mindset of investors and you know, what it takes to ride out some of the short-term volatility, you know, so that you stay in the market, you know, for the long term. Help us to understand, I guess, the difference between some of those discussions that we've had around mindsets versus you know, the mental models that we're talking about. I mean, beyond charts and balance sheet, what role does that clear thinking play in successful investing?
Yes, I think, I mean, obviously some of the previous things that we've discussed largely revolves around, you know, thinking opportunistically about where there's opportunities in the market and how you could potentially manage risks better. But there's a limit to everything. And sometimes it's not possible to, you know, manage everything to the nth degree to get the result that you after. What you need to also have some control over is how you perceive these things. So largely mental models, where they can be quite effective, is assisting investors in terms of deciding which information is relevant versus what is irrelevant. And through that process, that will also help you when you bucket things that might look concerning when you read headlines. But by the time you've really thought of them more critically, you come to the understanding that they're largely irrelevant for your purposes. So that will enable you to manage them better or think about them more clearly, or at least contextualize it in terms of what your desired outcome is. So say, for example, something like geopolitics has been, over the last few years in particular, something that's really in the media headlines, and people are super concerned around, is this going to affect the world? And we're talking about supply chains and all these things. But actually, if you think about how these wars have previously affected markets and equity investments in particular, then you see typically when the news of a new war comes through, it has a volatility impact on the market. So markets sell off, and then they digest the news, and then actually relatively quickly they rebound. So unless you're going to try and in some way or form apply a trading strategy over the very short term, which is not what we recommend doing, there's very few investors that want to do that. They just want to make sure their long-term savings are okay. So if your plan is just to make sure your long-term savings are okay, evidence actually suggests that you should not be worried about geopolitics at all, because these things happen from time to time. The impact over the short term can be severe, but over the long term, they're actually irrelevant. So it actually helps you to think about it in that context and put it in a bucket where you say, I acknowledge this geopolitical risk, but I appreciate that it's a short-term volatility factor as opposed to a long-term drag on my outcome. And therefore, I'm not going to worry about this just yet. So it immediately helps you to sifts through all of the different topics that investors are grappling with at the moment, bucket them appropriately, and think of them in the context of what the impact will be so that you can be clearer in your mind as to whether this is really relevant or not. And then you can ultimately start focusing on the things that are relevant and think even deeper about those kind of things. And the interesting thing about mental models, as simple as what this example is the best mental models are actually the simpler ones, because the whole purpose of a mental model is to simplify complexity. And if you think about some of the most successful investors, Charlie Munger, for those familiar with some of his comments and writing, would know that he was a big advocate of investors that need to formulate mental models to help them with similar things. So I think this is a very good introduction to someone that hasn't applied a thinking process along these lines, as I explained, as an introduction into mental models and it can be something as simple as list your concerns that you have at the moment. Then have two sections where you say, is this something that affects my investment over the short term or longer term? And then I would say you focus on the things that are in the long-term list, because those are the things that's going to drive your long-term outcomes and whether you're successful or not. It doesn't mean the stuff on the short term is irrelevant, because they hold other risks around behavioral finance that could be potential traps. But it means that you shouldn't change your whole strategy for what you're aiming to achieve just because of those factors. You can think more tactically about them, but they shouldn't alter your overall strategy at all.
Adrian, am I understanding you correctly to say that mental models, as opposed to a mindset, is what framework are you applying to a particular situation? If it's geopolitics, this is the framework we apply. If it's a bear market, this is what we apply. If it appears as if the market is running a bit too hot, this is how we almost frame it in mind, the type of questions and the type of answers we're looking for before we make an investing decision.
Yeah, I think it's any kind of exercise that you use to make thinking about your actions more clearly. So I think, especially in the world right now, if you were to type in to an AI assistant at the moment, give me a list of all the concerns that's on the minds of investors globally, it's going to spit out a list of scores of things from geopolitics, inflation, the Fed, valuations, labor markets, interest rates, fiscal deficits, and the list will go on and on and on. But which of those are the things that you really need to focus on? It's actually quite complicated if you want to work through that whole list. So how do you get to something that's really important and the stuff that you need to focus on? So I think, saying it another way, it's just a specific mental model, specifically the one that we're talking about, is how do you filter the noise from the things that would be influential, really influential, and then focus on getting those things right. Don't let the things that are more noise detract your energy and introduce risk into your process in terms of what you would do with your investment. Because often people start to make changes because of those things. And it's ironic, because they wouldn't have had a long-term impact on your portfolio had you left them. But because you made changes, now all of a sudden the outcome of your portfolio will be very different. So a good example of this is maybe something like recessions, for example. People talk about recessions all the time because over the short term they lead to severe sell-offs in the market. But the thing with the recession is that they are actually quite short-lived, and they always correct, and the markets continue to grow. So if you change your portfolio because you think there's a recession coming, and you take a lot of your equity exposure off the table, it immediately means that if you're wrong, your returns will be significantly lower because you didn't have the equity exposure. But if you had just left it in place and accepted that a recession was going to be part of your journey, in any event, there's a recession every 5 years on average, say, for example, 5 to 7 years on average, there's a recession. But you don't know when they are, but you know that the markets will rebound. So you're not going to try and time the recession and think in anticipation of, you're just going to leave it. Now, all of a sudden, you still get the upside When markets sell off, you see it, but you live with it because you know that the markets will recover. So there isn't a risk that you can get the timing wrong and ultimately make a mistake. Where if you focus on recession specifically and try to position your long-term investment plan around potential recessions, it's almost guaranteed that you're going to sacrifice returns through that process.
Well, someone that wants to maybe look at various mental models that do exist for investors, Adrian, do you have maybe a starter pack, a starter kit on some of the things, either existing models or situations in which people would benefit from, developing some type of a model for themselves?
Yeah, I think as a first basis, I think something that, as I've explained now, just thinking about the short term and long term, which are things that matter over the short term, which are things that matter over the long term, is a useful start as a first mental model. But then there's other things that you can then extend your thinking on. And sometimes it's purely just reflecting on what you've learned through an experience that can help you collate those ideas. So often what professional investors do is they go through post-mortem exercises when there's mistakes to develop a better way of thinking about what's happened in the portfolio. And the range can be vast, and for many people it might be different, and you need to find something that resonates with you. But I would definitely, I mean, for guys interested in this kind of thing and how it's helped people, I would definitely read up on some of the things that Charlie Munger has wrote before. So the one that I've mentioned now is something that we've developed specifically in my environment for me to think about, because it has a lot of application value in our environment from a wealth perspective. Because we often speak to clients about thinking short term and long term and distinguishing between noise and what's really valuable. But if you look at some of the things that Charlie Munger has spoken about before, is he's probably the most famous one, that he would say a circle of competence. And that's just understanding where your skill sets lie, where they don't lie. So if you're gonna think about recessions in the context of your portfolio, unless you're a person that understands economic cycles really well and the impact they have on markets, and you can adapt that to benefit your strategy, you should probably steer away from that. If you are someone that works in the mining industry and you understand the supply chains really, really well, you're probably a bit better equipped to interpret that area of the market as opposed to other people in the environment, just by way of example, just to distinguish where your circle of competence might sit or might not sit. And this is also why we often talk about DIY investing. I think it's often people want to play the markets, and they want to dabble in things and invest in things that they hear of. But ultimately, they're not professional investors. It doesn't mean that they can't make money out of the markets, but you've got to be clear on how much skill you really have and be really honest with yourself whether you can sustain that over the long term, and how much luck sometimes feature into outcomes as opposed to real skill. And that's a difficult thing because it speaks to human ego and being really honest with yourself around those things. But even in our environment, for example, we do this all the time, because you've got to be in our environment, things get complicated. We've got wealth managers that do things around financial planning, and we work with them very closely. But that doesn't make me a wealth financial planning expert. So whenever I speak to clients, I must be careful that I don't talk about financial planning concepts. That's not really my area of competence. I've picked up a few things in the trade, obviously, through my interactions with advisors. But if someone needs financial advice, the first thing I do is to refer them, because I know it's not my circle of competence. And the same on the asset management side. Often you see there's many managers in the industry that sort of resort to also fund selection and using components of manager portfolios in their funds. And we don't think that's a good thing, because their circle of competence is not really manager selection. It's more asset allocating and selecting the right securities, and vice versa. For our multi-manager business, their area of competence is selecting good funds and understanding what the good due diligence is when you work through fund selection, not security selection per se. That we've got a different team for that. So that's a useful example, but I mean that's difficult to imply or to apply. And then something else that's quite interesting that Charlie Munger also used to use is he always said always invert. So you've got a view in terms of how things might pan out, but invert the view and see what would happen if you're completely on the other side of the view and things. Then you start to balance the negative outcome or the risk versus the opportunity you see. And I think something, if you think about crypto assets, for example, if you're very optimistic about the potential outcome for Bitcoin and you think the price is going to go up tenfold over the next decade, what happens if you're wrong? How bad could it be? And then weigh up the risks and benefits in context of that. And so it's often really simple things, but it's supposed to simplify your thinking and give you better context and make you think more broadly about the potential things that could impact you
With
and what
everything
is
that you've
relevant versus
just
irrelevant
said,
and where you can
Adrian,
reduce
I like
biases and
especially
improve
that circle of
your actions
competence that
within
you're
that
talking
model
about.
through
And
that
I think
model.
a lot of the time people do get trapped a bit by either commenting on or, thinking that they know more about a certain subject or topic than they actually do. So, reverting or the or always going back to the experts is always a great one. Another one for us is how does thinking in time change the way investors approach what you call this approach the market?
Yeah, I think that one specifically comes back to the model that I like to use in terms of distinguishing between the noise and the relevant things. Because certain things are relevant short term, but they might not be relevant long term. So again, thinking about something like interest rates, it's really important. We talk about it all the time. Every day that there's a MPC announcement or a Fed announcement, we all want to interpret it. We debate it extensively. And it's really important for fixed income investments because all of a sudden your home price or your mortgage or bond payments might go up. Or if you're fortunate enough to have cash investments, the interest rate that you receive on that might be going up. Or if you've got bonds, it can impact those. But from a long-term investment on my equities, I'm going to see multiple higher interest rate cycles and multiple lower interest rate cycles. Should I really be overthinking this in terms of what I do with my equity position? And again, it's not saying it's completely irrelevant. It's just about how much attention you give it. So for us, we say it's important over the short term. So you've got to think tactically. The last thing that you want to do is to increase your equity exposure significantly when we aggressively increasing interest rates. That's very relevant. But it doesn't mean you're not going to hold any equities because interest rates are going up. Because over the long term, it's still super important that you have that exposure. So it's supposed to, I think the important thing there is distinguish between strategy and tactics. Your strategy doesn't change. You needed that equity exposure in your portfolio to deliver long-term inflation beating returns. But tactically, you might go 5% underweight because you know that there's some risk over the near term. So I think it's also just think in terms of importance, ranking things in terms of the impact that they might have, and then aligning your action and the severity of what you do and the impact of what you do might have on the portfolio must align with that. So if we say interest rates are important, but over the long term, they're not really that important at all. So we're going to think about it, but we're not going to spend 3 days analyzing short-term interest rates in the context of our 20-year portfolio. Let's think about it tactically, whether we want to be overweight or underweight slightly, and where we can manage volatility over the short term. And then we're going to move on because we really want to think about the things that are going to drive long-term outcomes.
And can I confirm that that distinction between noise versus signal, to use other people's terms, is similar, to distinguishing between the knowns and the unknowns when it comes to investment analysis? Can we almost say this is, I guess, the same concept?
Yeah, it's a similar concept. So, if you think about something like, say, for example, valuations, Over the long term, they're actually quite important because they have a very good relationship with outcomes. So if you invest in cheaper assets, then typically they yield better results over longer periods. Over the short term, they largely irrelevant. The market can go up or down 50% regardless of where the market is from a valuation perspective. Markets don't care about valuations over the short term. So if you think about it from that perspective, valuation is important what it is. Over the short term, it's actually noise. So everything you read about the market might go down 30% this year because valuations are expensive, it's actually not true. Because there's an equal chance that markets might go up. But if you think about the long term, if the headline said valuations are expensive, therefore we have a strategic underweight view for this asset class until the valuations change. But our intent is to keep this underweight position until such time that things do change, and it's going to be 5% underweight. Now you've thought critically about how that should feature in your portfolio.
And with what you're saying then, I think the key thing that people will want to know is to say, all right, I'm understanding the models, I'm understanding distinguishing between noise and signal, I'm understanding the distinction between knowns and unknowns, and maybe how to go about them. But there's so much information overload in today's world, and especially if you're an investor, there are reports, there are stock charts, there are analysts, saying what they're saying, companies are saying what they're saying, there's news flow, all of these different things. How can investors actually identify what really matters in a world like that? What's the mental model that can help them with something like that?
Well, if I think about equities, for example, I think there's really three primary things that matter over the long term. The one is consumer spending, because if consumer spending doesn't trend upwards, then you're going to have a problem. Because if consumers aren't spending more over time, then companies won't make more money over time. It's just really as simple as that on aggregate. So we want consumer spending to tick up. So if there's anything that could structurally undermine consumers for an extended period of time, that would be a major flag for me. The other thing is a material risk is deflation. So remember, inflation is effectively actually quite positive for investors from the perspective that if prices go up, the earnings that companies report will also go up because their revenues are directly linked to the prices of the products. And if earnings go up, stock prices go up. So that's beneficial from two things. The earnings itself goes up, but also you've got an inherent inflation hedge in there because the revenue is directly linked to inflation. So it's a very good inflation hedge. So that is something. If we see that there's a potential risk of any deflation, then you've got to think whether you want to invest in equities long term or not. And we've been fortunate that we haven't seen any deflation for decades. But if you do get in that environment, you've got to think carefully. And the other is valuation. So yes, valuations start to matter more, especially over medium periods. Over short term, markets can do anything. Over the long term, they tend to matter because they, especially at the extremes, if markets are very expensive, they could really impact your returns. And you can see that correlation if you go through the statistics. It's a pity I can't show you a graph. But and then over the long term, actually, it starts to matter. The really long term, it starts to matter less and less, because ultimately, as long as you get earnings growth and growth coming through, then that will really help. And really, it's only those three things that you need to worry about. If you're then worried, say for example, there's a lot of talk about US valuations. The question isn't so much whether you then say, well, I'm not going to invest in equities. If you want to manage that risk, don't say I'm going to go into cash. Just find somewhere else that might not have the full extent of those risks. And that's where the diversification thing comes back into play, because now you can potentially consider going into international markets or emerging markets where you still have that equity component, so you're not deviating from your strategy, but tactically you've decided to allocate elsewhere. And that's a clever way of approaching it, as opposed to just deflecting out of markets because there's going to be a recession or there's going to be a devaluation risk in the area of the market. So rather think how you can stick to the strategy, but adopt tactics that will better get you to the point that you need to be. So your tactics change, your strategy doesn't change.
Up the discussion then, Adrian. The key one is to say, given all the forces that are affecting the market, long-term forces that historically drive, equity performance, for example, should investors be worried about things like recessions and geopolitics, or the long and short of today's conversation, are we saying simply plan around some of these eventualities, because it's not a matter of if it will happen, but rather when it's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think that's sort of a byproduct of the mental framing of thinking about your portfolio in this context or in this way. Because if you think about recessions, just going back to that example, typically recessions historically they tend to last about 14 months on average, where the expansion phases typically are 5 times longer. And funny enough, the bear and bull markets are quite similar. The typical bear market is exactly 14 months as well, and the typical bear market and the typical bull market is also 5 times longer than the typical bear market. So that's just to say that you proportionate your thinking in that way as well. You're positioning your odds against yourself over the short term if you're going to try and miss those. Rather live with the 14 months and sort of maybe view that as a tax in order to access the 5 times longer bull market. So if you can accept that equity markets don't always just go up and you have the occasional blip, it becomes much easier to just see the blip and say, it was part of my journey. I knew this was coming, but I know the biggest risk is not the recession. The biggest risk is my behavior right now. And I know it's probably going to be more beneficial for me to stay put. I've thought about this before going into my investment, and I know what I'm in for. And this is all still within expectation, and my strategy is not going to change. So the real risk of recessions really is if you look at what happens to clients' portfolios, it's not so much the recession. The recession doesn't have a permanent loss of capital. The client's behavior in reaction to recessions often have a permanent loss of capital.
So that's been it. We were in discussion with Adrian Pask, who is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, talking about mental models for navigating markets, sponsored by PSG Wealth. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks again, Madhu. I appreciate it, and I hope the audience finds it of some use and they can have some success with a tip or two there.
Most certainly. I've been your host, Madhu Agavaza, of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on Spotify, Play.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.